The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Happy Memorial Day weekend on this special holiday episode of the Solid Monster Sounds Off. Number 329 here for Sunday, May 25th, 2014. I am the Solid Monster. It is the official, I guess unofficial, start of summer, I should say. Officially, summer won't begin for another month, but we got some nice weather here in New York. Hopefully you have good weather wherever you are in the world and are hanging out with friends and family this weekend, barbecuing, doing all that fun stuff. Want to give a shout-out at the beginning of the podcast this week to Bailey and Seth on their nuptials this past Friday. Congrats to the bride and groom, big fans of the show. I was honored to have been invited, but that Norwegian wedding, I think, was enough for me. Although I do have a wedding to attend next weekend, as long as it's not my own, it's all that matters. Thank you to the folks who signed up for an Audible trial this week and helped the show out in that way. You can go to audibletrial.com/solidmonster. It's our own custom URL. If you're going to sign up and give the service a try, you can do so free for 30 days to get one free audiobook. If you're going to give it a shot, you may as well help the show out. Use our own URL, audibletrial.com/solidmonster. It's an audiobook service, so I've heard from a lot of people who have enjoyed listening to the books on their commute to work or even at the gym. And so give it a shot. Free for 30 days. You can cancel anytime. You're under no obligation. Even if you cancel, you still help the show out by just signing up for the trial. That's all you got to do. Whether you stick with it or not, just signing up for the trial is enough to help out the Sound Off. And you get one free audiobook that you get to keep no matter what. So audibletrial.com/solidmonster is the link. And thank you to the people who donated via PayPal to the show. Give a shout out to Aniket Sawant, Rob Bigfoot Sutter, Rick Mayhem Malloy, and Dastardly Derek Smith. They were the ones who made PayPal donations this week. If you donate $10 or more, you get a wrestling nickname, but you can donate pretty much whatever you want to any day of the week. TheSolidMonster.com is the place to go. You'll see it on the right-hand side of the page. I have people asking me, you know, what are the best ways to help out the Sound Off and to really support the show? Some people not a fan of PayPal for whatever reason. Signing up for an Audible trial is probably the next best thing. It's the best alternative, although you should do that anyway. You should do that as well. But either that or donating via PayPal. Either way will work. So thank you to everybody who has done so. We're going to lead off the podcast this week a little bit differently before we get into the reviews. The story that I want to talk about concerns the rumored return of Ric Flair to WWE. And more specifically, the role that Ric Flair will likely be playing on television when and if he does come back to TV. PW Insider ran an item this week claiming that Flair is scheduled to go to Pittsburgh to undergo WWE medical testing in advance of signing a new deal that would see him return to TV full-time as a manager. Or whatever the word of the week is, since manager apparently is a dirty word. I know Paul Heyman calls himself an advocate or an agent. Zeb Coulter, I don't know what they call him on television. So whatever they call him, it's basically a manager. They just don't like using that word. Supposedly, Flair pitched the idea of being in Dolph Ziggler's corner and kind of being his backup, his second, if you will. But that idea reportedly got shot down. And instead, it looks like he will most likely be paired off with The Miz, who is back. The Miz wrestled on the European tour, which I believe has now come to an end. He's been off the last few months filming for the Marine Four. That's where Summer Rae was. She also now is back on TV. I've also seen reports that The Shield is another possibility as far as who Ric Flair could manage, although I don't know where those rumors are coming from. PW Insider, at least, is a source that I trust, and I didn't see them report that. Where do I even begin with this? First off, The Shield doesn't need a manager, okay, let alone a 65-year-old man. So if this idea had a brain, let's put a bullet in the back of its head right now, okay? No managers for The Shield. They break up, they go singles at some point, I'm sure it'll happen, and you want to make Roman Reigns, let's say a Paul Heyman guy or something, that's fine. The idea of putting Flair with The Miz makes sense in that Flair gave him the figure four leg lock. You know, they've had some interaction together, although that was so long ago that most people have already forgotten about it, and it's meant nothing to The Miz. You know, if the idea was to put Flair with The Miz or have Flair endorse The Miz and help get him over that hump and get him back to a position of respectability, that got dropped pretty quick. So think about that. You know, they had Flair give him the figure four leg lock, and boy, that's done wonders for his career, as we've seen. What was Miz doing before he went off to film The Marine 4? He was barely on television. And when he was, he would walk down to the ring in the middle of other people's matches, and he would bitch to the announcers that guys like Santino were getting TV time and not him. And then they dropped the angle. Another angle for The Miz, seemingly dropped out of nowhere. Nothing ever came of it. You know why? Because if they thought he could make them money, and The Miz could really be a big star, they'd have something for him. They wouldn't just throw shit at the wall to see what sticks. He got the title in 2010 because they tried to make a new star, and they wanted somebody new to work with John Cena at WrestleMania. You know, good on them for trying. But it failed. He got a cheap win, and then he lost the title a month later, and he's been a laughingstock ever since. I can't even blame The Miz for all of that. He did his best. Okay, he's good. The Miz is good. That's it, though. He's good. He's not a top guy. Okay, he's just not. Great ambassador for the company. Does PR work for them all over the world. He's been a fan since he was a little kid, just like me, right? I appreciate that. I don't hate The Miz. What I do hate is this idea that they may waste whatever value Flair has left on a guy that's never going to be above a certain level. Dolph Ziggler, on the other hand, has way more potential. We know he's a great athlete, he's got charisma, and maybe, you know what, maybe he is his own worst enemy, maybe he does open his mouth and say things that get him into trouble, but what has he ever said in any interview that's really so awful? He talks himself up a lot, okay. Nobody likes a show-off. That's the dude's gimmick! He calls himself the show-off! He got the world title last year, then he got kicked in the head. Okay, through no fault of his own. Shit happens. He got kicked in the head, he got concussed. And like a lot of other guys, Fandango comes to mind, who it seems like they have plans for, when they get hurt and they're out for a while, they lose interest in them. Or they hold it against them in some weird way, like it's their fault. He's been booked like shit ever since he came back. He's never gotten back to that same level. And now, with there only being one championship, it's going to be a lot harder for him to get back there. But you know what? Despite how he's been booked, for some reason, people are still into Dolph Ziggler. People still cheer for the guy. They don't sit on their hands for the guy when he comes out. They chant, "Let's go, Ziggler." So why fight it? Why not try to rebuild the guy? The one knock on Ziggler, and this is my opinion, but I'm not the only one who said this, are his promos. It's a weird deal because, you know, he's a good talker, but if we're being honest here, I don't think he's a good promo guy. You know, he can be. He's got the tools to be. But a lot of times he'll talk like a mile a minute, and it's like, dude, just slow down. You know, but that's where a guy like a Ric Flair could be so effective. That's what I mean. Whatever weaknesses Ziggler may have, a guy like Flair could plug those holes in. In the ring, he's got it covered, okay? The dude's a beast in the ring. He just had a really fun brawl with Batista on SmackDown. He was out there busting his ass for a good 10, 12 minutes, whatever it was. And I don't have a chance to watch SmackDown every single week, but I knew Hogan was going to be on. I was curious what he would say, and Bo Dallas was making his debut, so I said, I'll watch SmackDown this week. And the first match I saw, I think it was the first match, was Ziggler and Batista. And it was a really, really good match. And Batista held his own, but Ziggler was in there just doing his thing, you know, working hard, busting his ass. He didn't win, but he looked good. He got a lot of offense and a hell of a lot more offense than I would have expected. He still goes out there and busts it, you know. He doesn't need any help in the ring. He's got that covered. But with promos, him and Flair as a combo could be very entertaining, and it could be just the thing that he needs to become relevant again. Because, you know, whoever they put Ric Flair with, they're going to make it a priority, or Triple H, or whoever is going to make it a priority to make sure that Flair and that person are getting an adequate amount of TV time, and they're getting the exposure they need. They're not going to waste Flair on somebody. They're not going to put some mid-card jobber-level guy with him. They're not going to put Zack Ryder with Ric Flair. Okay, they're going to put somebody with him who they actually think they could do something with, who's going to get time on TV, and it would be the perfect spot to use a guy like a Dolph Ziggler. Now, this is coming from somebody who doesn't think Ric Flair needs to be back on TV. Okay, you know, he talks about guys like Mick Foley overstaying their welcome in wrestling, as if that isn't the fucking pot calling the kettle black. But if they're going to bring him back and he actually wants to work with Ziggler, if that's true, doesn't that tell you that he sees something in the guy? What does that say about Dolph Ziggler standing in that company when Ric Flair asks to work with him and he gets shot down? Somebody has it out for this guy, for whatever reason. And you know what makes me really angry when I hear about shit like this? TNA. And I know, yeah, the fanboys are going to be all upset. There he goes, just piling on TNA. TNA has nothing to do with this, and yet somehow it's their fault. Here's what I mean when I bring up TNA. Had TNA not gone and fucked everything up, they could have been a real alternative to WWE. They've been around for 12 years. That's a long-ass time. Ring of Honor has actually been around slightly longer, only by a few months. 12 years is a long time. Plenty of time to establish your company, to establish an identity for your company. Okay, it may not be the 50 or 60 years that WWE, you know, they kind of have a head start on everything here. But that's a long time. They could have been something different. They could have been a real alternative to what we see for 3 hours every Monday, a lot of which isn't good either. Okay, that could have been them. Not competing with WWE, because they're never going to, but a place that had national TV exposure, which they do for now, that had a really talented roster, and they still do, but that roster is dwindling every single week, that knew what to do with that roster, which they clearly don't, that wasn't trying to be a sugar-free version of WWE, which they try to be every single week. Okay, we're a guy like a Dolph Ziggler, and there's a million names you could put on that list. He's hardly the only one. But we're talking about Dolph here, so we'll go with him. A guy like him could look at his position and say, you know what? Fuck these guys. When my contract is up, I'm jumping ship to TNA. If these guys won't give me a fair shake and don't want to make money with me, I'll go somewhere else and make money. And maybe WWE would actually think twice, and they would work extra hard to keep the guy and actually do something with him. Now, if Ziggler's contract expires and he goes to TNA, I'm sure they'll make him champion within 6 months. But it's not going to mean a damn thing. I mean, you know, getting a certificate for having perfect attendance in elementary school means more than being the TNA champion these days. You think him going there at this point is going to make a difference? Of course not. And he's not going to make the kind of money somewhere else that he'd make in WWE. So he's kind of stuck in a way. But it would be nice. It would be nice for guys like him to have that option. And they don't. So they're stuck. So we read reports that they want Flair to manage The Miz instead of Ziggler. And you ask yourself, why? What can Flair do for The Miz that he couldn't do times 10 for Dolph Ziggler? A guy people actually still react to and still care about when they've been given absolutely no reason to do so. Okay, Bob Holly, a guy who worked for 15 years for WWE. I reviewed his book on our YouTube channel a while back. It's really good. It's an honest read. I would recommend it to anybody who's looking for a wrestling book to check out. One thing he talked about in the book that I absolutely agree with, and I'm pretty sure I brought this up in my review, is this false notion that you've got to make your own push, right? You hear guys say that who have worked for WWE before. You know, guys get criticized for not stepping outside the box and doing stuff to get themselves noticed, and then when they do, what happens? What reports do you hear about? They get punished for it. I bring up Holly because he just did an interview with the Shoot Radio Show, and he said the same thing. WWE is always preaching you have to work your ass off and this and that, but at the end of the day, it's all about Vince McMahon or Triple H. It's their choice. They call the shots. And Holly went on and on in this interview about how he thinks Dolph Ziggler is the best talent in WWE, because he still pays attention, he watches the product, and he thinks Dolph is the best thing they got. He loves the guy. He says he has everything it takes to be number one. That's just one person's view. Okay, I'm not calling Dolph Ziggler the best guy in WWE, but I would agree that he has everything it takes to be number one. Again, maybe the promos aren't there, but again, that's where a guy like Flair could be so helpful. But to go back to Holly's point, though, I love that stuff about how, oh, you've got to make your own push. I hear Jim Ross talk about that sometimes, and it drives me nuts. Because from the outside looking in, as a fan, it sounds like complete horseshit. Well, here's a guy in Bob Holly who actually worked for the company for 15 years, who was on the inside, who went through a lot of the same stuff and the same politics and all that. And he's saying the exact same thing. It's all nonsense. They pick and choose who they like and who they don't. And if you get branded a certain way, it's very hard to wash that stink off yourself. And that's their choice, you know, whatever. It's their sandbox to play in. Okay, it's their company. But it's frustrating to watch a guy like Ziggler consistently get passed over for opportunities because the guy's really, really good. Mick Foley has been very vocal of late about a lot of things recently. He just did an interview for Jeff Jarrett's Global Force Wrestling YouTube channel, and he brought up Dolph Ziggler also. He said Ziggler is a prime example of how subjective the decision-making in WWE can be. And he said the same thing I've been saying for years and years on this podcast, which is that Dolph Ziggler is a terrible name. He's had it for so long now that I don't think it matters if you change it or not. I mean, it's been so many years. But Foley said he actually pitched this really detailed idea to WWE many years ago about how Dolph could get rid of the name and also get some mainstream publicity out of it. I guess he had this whole plan in his head drawn up, and he sent it over, but he never heard back from anybody in charge. It really is an awful name, I have to say, but it's not the name that's holding back Dolph Ziggler. It's somebody behind the scenes who has it in for the guy. You need new stars. When CM Punk walks out, when Daniel Bryan has to have neck surgery, when John Cena inevitably gets hurt again because he's 37 years old now, doing the kind of schedule he's doing, and he's not unbreakable, when that happens, you need to have new stars ready to step up and take their spot. Ziggler's a guy with 10 years. He's not new. But people will buy into him as a top-level guy if you give them a reason to do so. The Miz is not that guy. Holly sees it. Foley sees it. Flair sees it. Get your head out of your ass and give the guy a shot. Let's run through some Raw notes here. They were on their European tour, so Raw was live from London, UK, this past Monday night. I thought it was disappointing for a UK show. The crowd was fun, but the show was kind of boring, I thought, overall. The decision on the WWE World Heavyweight Championship is that there was no decision made on the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. Stephanie McMahon ordered Daniel Bryan to show up on Raw this Monday to pop a good rating for Memorial Day. She didn't actually say that, but that's exactly why they're doing it, I'm sure. She said she will not strip him of the title, but she expects that he'll do the right thing, the honorable thing, and forfeit the title to the Authority on Monday. I guess we'll see. I say he keeps it. I cannot see him just surrendering the title. Cesaro beat Sheamus with a German suplex. That kind of came out of nowhere, but nice clean win for Cesaro. After Paul Heyman jumped up on the apron to distract Sheamus, Sheamus offered his hand to Cesaro when the match was over in a show of good sportsmanship, and Cesaro, as any good heel would do, teased accepting it, but then sidestepped him, and he left to loud applause from what was a very heavily pro-heel crowd here in the UK. We had beat-the-clock challenge matches on this show, which I'm not a fan of the beat-the-clock gimmick, but they did it to determine the number one contender to the Intercontinental title of Payback. Big E beat Ryback in about 5 minutes. Alberto Del Rio, who obviously doesn't give a shit anymore at all. He just doesn't care. I mean, he came out missing his knee pads, no tan. Everyone pointed that out to me. He almost looked like Sheamus walking out there. He came out to wrestle Rob Van Dam, and not a good match. Him and RVD, there's something about the two of them. When they're in there, I mean, they beat the crap out of each other. They work kind of stiff, but they just do not have good matches. And RVD tried Rolling Thunder twice. The first time, it got kind of botched. He kind of just fell on Del Rio with a leg drop. They redid it. He still fucked it up. I think the problem was that both times Del Rio was out of position. Del Rio needed to be, I think, a lot further away. And there was whatever miscommunication between the two of them. So they fucked it up both times. But in the end, he hit the 5-star, got the pin. So RVD beat Big E's time. Came very close to setting the new record here in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. Unfortunately, he was a little off. But that would have been very appropriate for RVD. So he took the lead. Final match saw Dolph Ziggler come this close to pinning Mark Henry after the zigzag, but time ran out. Crowd was really bummed about that because they were into Dolph, but we all know how that goes. They're idiots. Bad News Barrett attacked RVD from behind with the Bullhammer Elbow, delivered some bad news, and then he posed to the British Bulldogs' old theme song, Rule Britannia. Very cool to hear that music again on Raw. R-Truth and Fandango never got started. Summer Rae made her return. She ran down to the ring, or walked down to the ring. She walked with a purpose, and she ended up kissing Fandango out of spite, and then attacking Layla. The only thing missing here was Joey Styles screaming catfight as they were rolling around on the mat. Fans were really into this. And it's also good to be Fandango these days. I think I've mentioned that before. He's got friends in high places, this guy. Rusev beat up a white dude on this show, Heath Slater. But you're not fooling me, big guy. Just trying to throw us off your scent. See, it's like knowing somebody who's racist and they say, I can't be a racist, I have black friends. How can I be a racist? Rusev's all like, Rusev not racist. Rusev beat up Caucasian jabroni. I'm not buying it. Racist Rusev lives on. Batista and Seth Rollins had a match with Triple H and Randy Orton outside the ring. Dean Ambrose and Roman Reigns on commentary. Mostly Dean Ambrose, who was quite great, I have to say, in putting down the announcers. Match ended in a no contest. Big brawl broke out. Shield stood tall in the end. You know, I watched this match, and between Rollins' performance, really his performance every single week on the show, and Ambrose on commentary, Roman Reigns doing his thing, it made me realize how scary bad this show would be without the Shield for the past year and a half. I mean, holy shit, this show would be awful without those three guys. They are the MVPs of Raw. Paige made her UK appearance, first UK appearance as the Divas Champion, proceeded to lose her very first match on TV. It is WWE. It is the girls' home. So what did you expect? She got pinned by Alicia Fox, who is continuing to get all psycho every single week, her psycho lady gimmick, which I like. I don't mind Alicia winning at all. But between this and Paige's match with Tamina on NXT, she looks nothing like the anti-diva that we saw all those months on NXT. She's come in and every week, every match, just gets her ass kicked and kicked and kicked, and then she kind of sneaks out the win in the end. And this week she didn't. She lost. But at least that means that feud will continue. I like what they're doing with Alicia. It's nice to see them doing something unique with the Divas instead of just having them come out and do the same thing every single week or this total Divas nonsense. Thank God Alicia Fox has nothing to do with that. And she's probably the most compelling character they have right now. Maybe the most compelling since what they were doing with AJ. And AJ also was doing a psycho woman gimmick. And actually, you go back before AJ, and probably the most interesting thing they did was the stuff with Trish Stratus and Mickie James, which was, I mean, at this point, probably going back 7 or 8 years. And Mickie James did a psychotic female gimmick. So I guess there's something about a woman being psycho that I find very unique. Wouldn't want to date them, but it makes for compelling television. We had a segment with Adam Rose and the Exotic Express finally getting a real reaction from the crowd. It only took them going overseas to the UK for that to happen. I fully expect that in Tennessee or wherever they are for Raw this week, the crowd will probably just nod their heads to his music and otherwise sit on their hands. So for 1 week, it was nice to see the guy get a reaction. He was out there with Zeb and Swagger. Zeb wanted to fight him, challenge him to a fight. Anyway, Rose got attacked by Swagger. He fought back. This is all building to a match between them at the pay-per-view where he will make his formal in-ring debut, unless you have the WWE Network and you watch NXT, and he actually wrestled there this week. But if you're not a network subscriber, then that will be his in-ring debut, and the first time a lot of people see him wrestle. And you know, I hope the gimmick succeeds. I think it's probably better than the Leo Kruger. A lot of people like Leo Kruger, and they actually hate Adam Rose. They think he was better off with the Kruger gimmick. There was something about that gimmick. It was boring. I just didn't find anything appealing about it. This gimmick probably has a short shelf life, too. I think he could probably only go so far as the party guy. There's no reason, though, at some point when he's established himself a little bit more, he can't take a darker turn and try something different. You know, right now I think this is being done just to get him over and get him on the main roster and get people acquainted with him and just have something fun for him to do, and we'll see where it goes from here. His in-ring work, from what I've seen, you know, he's a good wrestler. He's a good wrestler. I feel like he's missing something. There's something about the guy that I don't know. We'll see when he makes his debut at Payback and does the Adam Rose thing in the ring for the first time on the main roster, if I feel any differently. But I feel like he's missing something. John Cena beat Luke Harper by DQ in the main event. Everybody interfered. Rowan, Bray Wyatt, the Usos, they were all brawling. Usos got laid out with Sister Abigail's. Or would it be Sisters Abigail? What would be the proper grammatical usage there? I'll go with Sister Abigail's. Grammar is very important. Let us not forget the grammar girl.
Solo monsters, sound off!
I will never get tired of hearing that. Anyway, they drag Cena up the ramp onto the stage. Bray Wyatt delivered another Sister Abigail and sang a song while Luke Harper counted to 10 to illustrate that at Payback, Bray Wyatt can in fact beat John Cena in a last man standing match. And that was Raw. One of our listeners, Elliot, was at the Raw taping in London last Monday. He sent me a bunch of notes, and one thing he mentioned, I want to read this because I've noticed the same thing he did. He says, so many babyfaces use rest holds throughout the night, and this has been bugging me for months and months on television, too. I don't understand the concept of a babyface using a rest hold. We're not supposed to be clapping and chanting for the bad guy to get up off the mat and fight back. And I thought that was a fair point that Elliot makes, the overuse of rest holds. I mean, we know from, you know, listening to wrestlers talk about the psychology of wrestling and everything, that when a heel uses a rest hold, it usually serves a purpose because you want to get the crowd behind the baby face. They start, you know, they put their fist in the air and start shaking it. They're trying to get the crowd behind them, and they, you know, they work their way back up to their feet. Usually it takes three elbows to the gut, and then they break free. We've seen that so many times over the years in wrestling. And rest holds are also very effective in allowing two guys to communicate with each other. Some guys do a better job than others of hiding it. There are some guys who are notorious for not hiding it or speaking so loud we can hear everything they're saying. But they use it to communicate with each other, so they know what's coming up next and how to prepare for it. Or if the referee is relaying something to them from his earpiece, okay? So it serves a purpose. We're never going to get rid of rest holds. But I agree with him in that, you know, when a babyface is using a rest hold, and we have seen that more often, I don't really know what purpose that serves either. All it does is slow the match down. It can kill a crowd if you do it too often. You know, when Randy Orton locks somebody in a chin lock, I think he gets a lot of heat for it because it's almost part of his gimmick now. You know, chin lock Orton. But Orton's also a heel, so you can almost excuse it. Really is no good reason, I don't think, for a babyface to use a rest hold. I would agree with Elliot. SmackDown was also taped in London this week, and the full show leaked online. The satellite version of the show leaked. Now, this used to happen all the time during the Attitude Era and the Ruthless Aggression eras. There used to be a fan forum, and I can't remember the full name. It was something like the Sledgehammer forums. I'm hoping somebody listening to this knows what I'm talking about. And they would routinely have people that would upload video that you could download of the shows. See, because now we have YouTube and the WWE Network and Daily Motion and things just stream. You don't have to download everything. But people would upload, maybe not full shows, sometimes full shows, but clips and segments from the shows and music videos they put together. And I used to be a fan of that stuff. And every single week there would be something from the satellite feed of Raw or SmackDown, more so SmackDown because it was a taped show, that would leak, and people would download, and of course WWE would not be happy about it. So it's been a while since I've heard of a full SmackDown like that, with the the announcers coming out to their entrances, and you can hear them talking to the production truck and Kevin Dunn and Vince McMahon. Haven't seen that in a while. So I watched SmackDown on Wednesday, and there was a dark match as well between Sami Zayn and Adrian Neville. That was actually pretty good. Crowd was kind of quiet for it, but you could tell, you know, there were a decent number of people who knew who those guys were, which is a good sign for them because they'll be on the main roster soon enough. Hulk Hogan was there, kind of a waste of an appearance. Jimmy Hart introduced him. He came out literally just to tell the crowd, hey, the WWE Network is coming, and that's it. He didn't say when. He just said, you guys are going to be able to get the network, which they can't right now. I mean, obviously there's ways around it, but officially the network is not going to be available in the UK until at least the end of the year. So that was kind of weird that they would put that on the air. I mean, that almost looked like it should be a dark segment to me. And that's it. That's all Hogan did, unless I missed something. I did skim through the rest of the show. Maybe I missed a backstage segment with him. The best part of SmackDown, though, actually, before I get to that, I got to talk about Bo Dallas. Bo Dallas made his WWE main roster debut, his re-debut, since he was already on Raw And he may have been on some SmackDown shows back then. They already debuted him at the Royal Rumble a couple of years ago. They started something with him and Wade Barrett, then they dropped it. So technically speaking, this was his re-debut. But his debut doing this gimmick that he's been doing for months and months and months on NXT, where he's a very disingenuous heel. He is the cheesiest babyface you'll ever find who thinks everybody loves him. He has convinced himself that he is the end-all, be-all. People love him. They believe. He's got believers all over the world. He's traveled the world. He's visited every place from Cambodia to Bolivia, all over the world. And he came out for a match with Sin Cara. You know, it was a decent match, nothing special. He won with a springboard, I think the springboard bulldog off the ropes, which is Trish Stratus' old move. And the best part of this was the match ends. He is ecstatic. He does a victory leap around the ring, or victory, not a leap. That would be very impressive. Now, he did a victory jog around the ring, got back inside, went over to Sin Cara, and shook his hand like a good sport and said, "You did good, kid. You did good. One day, you might be somebody. Just keep on believing." And Sin Cara could just only look at this guy, just, we couldn't see his facial reactions because the dude wears a mask, but clearly he couldn't believe what he was seeing. I hope Bo Dallas does that every single week. In fact, I would love for Bo Dallas to get a fluke win over a main event level guy one week and go over and shake his hand and say, "You did good, kid. You keep doing that, you'll be somebody someday." He's like the antithesis of John Cena. He is like a parody. Not even the antithesis. He is a parody of John Cena. I don't know if that's the intent of the gimmick, but it's quite genius, I think. And I would not even mind seeing a John Cena-Bo Dallas feud at some point. Too early for that right now, but they could always build to that. So I'm a big Bo-liever, big fan of Bo Dallas. Best part of SmackDown, though, the SmackDown feed that I saw was Michael Cole, his dialogue with Vince McMahon at the end of the show on his headset. It sounded like Vince was chastising him for something, as if, you know, it almost sounded like maybe he didn't mention the app or he didn't mention the network enough times, as if he doesn't already promote the app and the network enough. Vince was taking him to task for something. We couldn't tell what exactly. You know, I said this on Twitter. I'll say it again here. People rag on Michael Cole a lot, even myself sometimes. Not as much as I used to. But, you know, certainly he'll do things or say things or act a certain way on TV, and it's just so grating on the nerves. The worst thing they have the announcers do, and again, I can't blame him for this because I'm sure they're being told to do it, and Lawler is as guilty as Cole is of this, is when they do that fake laughter, especially when John Cena's out there talking about stuff that supposedly is funny, except it's not. And they tell the announcers to fake laugh, and you hear like Cole snorting on commentary, and it's just the most grating thing in the world. So people rag on the guy a lot. I have myself. But you watch something like this, and it's easy to forget. He's only doing what the Irish madman in his ear tells him to do. You know, he's doing what he's told. And Vince, I'm sure, could be a very demanding, difficult person to work with. And imagine having his voice in your ear for 3 hours every single Monday and another 2 hours on Tuesdays. Because Cole does, you know, the commentary with JBL for SmackDown as well. He does the pay-per-views every single month. I mean, Michael Cole has a lot of responsibility in WWE. And he's got a lot of things he's got to remember to do and a lot of things he's got to remember to promote. And if you don't do it a certain way, you've got this psycho in your ear, you know, telling you you're doing it wrong, you got to do it this way, or you got to do a better job. And I think Cole, as it is, does a pretty good job, and he probably gets a lot of flack unfairly for it because he's only doing what he's told. So I think every now and then we have to take a step back and just remember that. One other thing we learned from the feed is that apparently you're not allowed to use the phrase "making out," as Michael Cole originally said when they were recapping the Summer Rae kissing Fandango angle on Raw. He had to go back and say kissing. So remember that. There's no making out on Vince McMahon's television. Or marking out, for that matter. Just ask Matt Stryker. NXT this past Thursday, Renee Young was back this week. And for some reason, she really, 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 really hates Tim Tebow. Bo Dallas came out, she compared him to Tebow, and outright said that she hates the dude. I'm not sure what he ever did to her. I wouldn't mind being on Renee's bad side. I wouldn't mind being on any side of Renee, but that's a podcast for a different day. Dallas cut a pre-match promo declaring himself Mr. NXT and vowed to never leave his Bo Leavers. The stipulation here was that if he wins and can beat Big E, he gets himself a shot at the NXT title. But if he loses, he leaves NXT forever, which is dumb since he's on Raw and SmackDown now, but we have to pretend like he's, you know, browsing through the want ads on Craigslist, I guess, looking for work. One thing that struck me was how frickin' over Big E was with those five-count chants on this show. It befuddles me. That's right, I said befuddles me. Why they never brought it to TV once he split from Ziggler and AJ. I don't get it. You know, they're doing nothing with him right now. It's not too late. So they had a match. Bo Dallas took the turnbuckle pad off, tried to cheat, but it backfired. Big E hit his stupid finisher for the win. So Bo Dallas must leave NXT. What happened after the match was the best part of the entire show, and maybe the best Bo Dallas stuff I've seen him do yet with this delusional heel gimmick. He had a complete meltdown. Just could not believe that he lost. Couldn't believe that he lost. I'm sorry. He started crying. He was foaming at the mouth. No, no, no. This can't be happening. I don't want to go. You can't make me. What are you doing to me? You know, for a moment there, I thought they told him that they were shipping him off to TNA. So he leaves the ring. He kicks the ring steps, but he hurts himself and falls down. When they come back, they have footage that was filmed during the break of Dallas, he's calmed down a little bit. He's on stage with a microphone in hand, addressing the crowd at Full Sail University. He says, "I'm sorry for having to use such strong language here, but right now I strongly dislike you people." People in the crowd started cracking up. Then the fans started maybe the best chant I've heard all year. They started chanting, "Bo, leave," at him, and they were all pointing to the exit, so they would say "Bo," and then they would point and say "Leave." That was awesome. That was awesome. You know, the crowd at Full Sail can be a little too smarky for their own good sometimes, but sometimes they nail it, and that was one of those times that they just nailed it. I hope that catches on. Everything about his interaction with the crowd here was gold. They kept telling him to leave, so he told them to leave. Then they would respond with, "You leave! No, you leave! No, you leave!" And back and forth they went until Bo said, "You know what, I'm going to be the bigger man," and he left. The crowd was just repeating everything he said like an annoying little child. I love this. This was great. The complete opposite of that horrendous backstage promo he did with JBL the week before when he kind of looked a little lost. He looked like he was reading off cue cards. It sounded completely forced and unnatural. This was the complete and polar opposite of that. I hope that now that he's on TV, hopefully we'll see more of this kind of interaction with the crowd and not what we saw the week before. Tyler Breeze interrupted a Sami Zayn promo backstage, challenged him to a match, but not tonight. Next week at NXT TakeOver, Zayn said, "Not tonight, why? What are you doing?" Breeze said he had to shop for a new case for his phone, and he had a ball to attend. A ball! Zayn could not believe that. Believe it, bitch! It's going to a ball. Paige was back on NXT for the first time since being stripped of her women's title. Why was she stripped if she's right back wrestling on the show? She wrestled Tamina. It's a rematch from Extreme Rules. Yet another match where Paige is dominated by her opponent and sneaks out a win at the end. I think she nailed the Paige Turner out of nowhere, got the pin. I can't remember. I think it was the Paige Turner. I don't like this get your ass kicked and then eke out a win crap that they're doing with her. She should be in there kicking ass, not getting her ass kicked. You know, on commentary, Renee Young kept talking about how dominant Paige has been since she won the Divas title. What is she watching? What show is she watching is what I want to know. That's one of the dumber things I think she's ever said. Adam Rose and Camacho. They've been building this for weeks. I still had no interest in seeing it, but at least we're finally getting the match. So what do? They have Adam Rose show just enough offense that it scares off Camacho, who I guess was expecting a cakewalk here. And so he gets himself intentionally counted out. Stupid! I hate that finish with every fiber of my being. The heel walkout is the most overused finish in this company. If they used it here and there, it might be good, you know, it might be a good way to get heat on the heel, but it doesn't mean anything when you do it every single week. Even on your developmental show, they're doing it. Forget Raw and SmackDown. I hated this finish. And I have even less interest in seeing the rematch at TakeOver this week. And by the way, am I the only one who looks at Adam Rose and thinks he looks like he's 40? He's not. He's only 34. But for whatever reason, he looks a lot older to me. Maybe it's just me. Natalya beat Sasha Banks with the sharpshooter semifinal match in the women's title tournament, so no crying tonight. That'll come next week when she wrestles Charlotte in the finals of the tournament at TakeOver. Ric Flair will be back in his daughter's corner. Bret Hart is on the event poster in Natalya's corner. Interesting how it's always Uncle Bret in her corner and never her own father. Such is the state of Jim the Anvil Neidhart these days. Main event had Adrian Neville beating Curt Hawkins with the Red Arrow. Hawkins is from Queens, New York, and was wearing the New York Mets colors. So, of course, he lost. Would have been more fitting had he been dominating the match and then got rolled up out of nowhere. That's a Mets joke, by the way. After the match, Tyson Kidd came to the ring, cut a passionate promo by punctuating every single line with the word fact. Fact! I am a former WWE Tag Team Champion. Fact! I've wrestled on the grandest stage of WrestleMania. Has he, by the way? I couldn't remember what match he would have had at WrestleMania. Fact! I can't buy myself TV time on Raw or SmackDown. Fact! I added that last one. Neville came back at him with a great line about how, as usual, the only member of his family taking home gold at TakeOver will be his wife. Oh yes, he went there. He's wrong, of course. They're both going to be losers, but it was still a great line. And with that, Kid left, and we got our final hype for next week's main event. So let's run down the card here. May 29th, that's this Thursday, NXT TakeOver live on the WWE Network. 2-hour special, 8 o'clock Eastern. Pre-game show at 7:30 with Paul Heyman and Renee Young. We have Adrian Neville defending his NXT title against Tyson Kidd. I got Neville here retaining and going over. Sami Zayn against Tyler Breeze to determine the number one contender to the NXT title. I'm going to go with Tyler Breeze here. Sami Zayn hasn't done much. He probably could use this win, and a Sami Zayn-Adrian Neville feud would be very good. But I've seen Breeze in there before with Neville. They've also had very good matches, and I'm a big believer in Tyler Breeze, and he needs this win every bit as much as Sami Zayn does. So I'm going with Tyler Breeze. I think he's winning this match. Charlotte, Natalya to determine the new WWE NXT Women's Champion. I think it's pretty obvious what the outcome here is going to be, and what it should be, which is Charlotte going over. NXT Tag Team titles on the line, The Ascension defending against Kalisto and El Local, going with The Ascension. As dominant as these guys have been all these months that they've been the NXT Tag Team Champions, and I know Kalisto just debuted and he's a really good athlete, but El Local needs to take the fall in this match, and the Ascension need to retain, because when it comes time for them to drop those belts, it has to be to a more dominant team. It has to be to a more well-established team, and they don't have many of them right now. But for them, after all this time, to lose to these two guys, who are probably going to get booed, I expect the Ascension to be the babyfaces, at least with the crowd, and I have a feeling that the Luchadors are going to get booed. But I'm going with the Ascension, and I feel they should win this match. And finally, Adam Rose and Camacho, I really just don't care about this match, but if they actually do have a decision, I figure Adam Rose is going over because he's on the main roster. Wouldn't look very good if Adam Rose lost to Camacho, of all people, even though Adam Rose is probably going to the next pay-per-view to wrestle Jack Swagger, so I'll go with Rose. And that is the show. Good time, I think, to make a splash with a debut like a Sami Callihan. His character is Solomon Crowe. He's waiting in the wings. And you could debut him in either of the two main event matches. You know, you could have him debut during the Sami Zayn-Tyler Breeze match, maybe, and have him cost Sami the match. So Breeze becomes the number one contender, and Sami can go ahead and feud with Crowe. Or if they want, you know, you can have him debut in the main event and have, you know, Neville win, but then get attacked maybe by Crowe, but that makes less sense since they're already having another match to determine the number one contender. And whoever wins that match is going to be the person who feuds with Adrian Neville. So maybe a Solomon Crowe debut in the Sami Zayn match to set that feud up. Not saying it's going to happen, but I think it would be a good time. Check this out, guys. For you, the listeners of The Sound Off, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so that you can check out their service. And it's a quality service. I wouldn't be mentioning it on my show if it wasn't. They have a bunch of wrestling books to choose from in audio form, including Lex Luger's book, Dusty Rhodes' book, Hulk Hogan's book is available with narration from the Hulkster himself. There's even one that chronicles the rise of the late Junkyard Dog in Mid-South, which sounds really interesting. You can choose any one of those free by trying audible.com. If you commute to work, or if you like listening to things other than music at the gym, I know a lot of people listen to this podcast that way. It seems to me an audiobook would absolutely make sense. To get one, make sure you go to audibletrial.com/solomonster. It's another way to show your support for the Sound Off, and you get something free in return. Can't beat that. Again, that's audibletrial.com/solomonster. We're back, shifting to TNA, unfortunately. Impact on Thursday did a little over 1 million viewers. Slight improvement over the previous week. The previous week was awful. They started at a 1.0 rating and fell throughout the entire show, ending with an 0.6 for Eric Young versus MVP, which was for the title, by the way. Their Slammiversary main event, and they lost viewers. And it's not even like they can see that and say, hey, you know, what we're doing here, it's not working. So let's change something. Let's make a change here or a change there, or let's end this or end that. They've got the next month of shows already in the can. They can't do anything about it. Another month of this shit. Which leads me to the show last Thursday. How about Kazarian burying his own company on TV in his final appearance? What company books something like that? TNA does. That's who. This show was... how do I describe this show? I can use words like shit and garbage and stuff like that, but it's almost so cliche at this point. We had appearance after appearance after appearance by MVP, Kenny King, and Bobby Lashley. MVP in particular. It was the MVP show. It was MVP overload this week on Impact. And then there were the brawls. I lost count after a while of how many brawls broke out on the show. The Wolves came out. They brawled with MVP, Kenny King, and Lashley. Eric Young comes out for a promo. So do MVP, Kenny King, and Lashley. And what happens? A brawl breaks out. Austin Aries comes out to EY's aid. So at least Aries found his way back on TV, at least for 1 week. Angelina Love issued an open challenge for her Knockouts title, and Gail Kim accepted, and then a brawl ensued. Then Angelina defended against Brittany instead and beat her to retain the title after the brain aneurysm referee once again was distracted by Velvet Sky's ass. MVP had a match with Austin Aries, ended when Kenny King and Lashley ran out for the DQ. Eric Young ran out for the save, got destroyed by MVP, and MVP said Eric Young would wrestle Lashley later in the show. That's when Delusional Dixie came down to the ring with EC3. The same Dixie who was supposedly banned from the Impact Zone along with Bully Ray. Remember that? That was about 2 or 3 weeks ago. She was banned for her own safety. Not anymore, apparently. Her answer as to why she was there despite her banning? I'm still the president of this company. Yes, we all know that, unfortunately. If no one's authority matters around here, why do we need two authority figures? One isn't enough? She teased an alliance with MVP after the feud that went on for months, the last couple months on their television. She was teasing an alliance with him and started coming on to him and was saying, it's not about what you could do for me, it's about what I can do for you. And that's when Bully Ray ran down to the ring and chased Dixie and EC3 away. MVP brought up the fact that, hey, I banned you too. What a bang-up job MVP is doing so far as the director of wrestling operations. He cut a promo, Bully Ray did, putting over Eric Young before Kenny King blindsided him. That allowed Dixie to march back into the ring. She told EC3 to get the tables. He tried to put Bully through one. He made a comeback. He went after Dixie, but EC3 attacked him from behind and put Bully through a table with a spinebuster, weakest-looking spinebuster through a table you'll ever see. Then Dixie stood over Bully's prone body and said, Dixie Carter fears no one. This is the point where I turned the show off. That segment was my breaking point. This show sucks. And next weekend, I didn't realize this until before I started recording here, but next weekend is 2 years. It's the 2-year anniversary of when I started watching Impact full-time again. After years, I was only kind of half-assed paying attention to what was going on because the show was so awful. It was terrible. And they started making changes. Russo went away. I know Bruce Prichard took over for a while, and the creative forces there changed. And I actually thought that for a while there, they were putting on, you know, some weeks a better show than Raw, consistently, week to week. I was more intrigued and actually looking forward to watching Impact on Thursdays than I was Monday Night Raw. That was when they took Impact live. It was also the night Brooke Hogan made her debut, ironically, that I started watching, although I assure you that was not the reason why I started watching. But yeah, I think it was May 31st, 2012, whatever that Thursday was. So here we are now 2 years later. And to say that this show has fallen off a cliff, it would be an understatement. I don't even know what you call it anymore. Nothing on this show is compelling in the least. Half of it doesn't make any sense. They contradict themselves 1 week after the other. This person makes a decision or a ruling, and the next week it's seemingly overturned. Dixie's going to be banned. Look what happened at the pay-per-view when MVP won control of wrestling operations. Dixie went away, right? She was still the president, but she was supposed to be gone. Didn't take very long for her to come back. Now she gets banned, she's back again. We got two authority figures when we don't need any. We have wrestlers who never even make appearances. What happened to Trent Beretta? I think it was Trent Beretta, under his real name. TNA brought him in months ago. He was part of the X Division stuff. He actually looked pretty good. Because I was looking over the roster the other day, and I was thinking of guys like, what's his name? Manic. And I remember the whole segment on the TNA YouTube channel when Dixie Carter sat in a room backstage with Manic and presented him with a contract, an actual contract, and he was all emotional, and it was a big day for him. He actually signed a deal with TNA now, and she said, no more sleeping in your car. And remember that whole thing? It's probably still on their YouTube channel if you look for it. When was the last time Manic made an appearance on this show? What happened to Trent Beretta? They brought him in. I think he won a big match for them. They never did anything with him again. So yeah, TNA will give opportunities to some of the smaller guys, X Division guys, that WWE probably wouldn't even look at. But what does it mean if they make appearances, you know, once or twice and they never show up again? There's no consistency. You can't get behind anybody on this show because they're just going to disappear. Some of the best guys they have, they're not doing anything with, or they're holding them down, or they're letting them go. I can mention AJ Styles. Look what he's doing. He's the IWGP champion. He's going back and forth between Japan and Ring of Honor. He's doing a hell of a lot better now than he ever did with TNA. And probably than he would if he would have gone to WWE. He's in a pretty good spot right now. You think he regrets leaving? I'm sure part of him, you know, TNA will always be a part of him. He was there for so long. I don't get the impression that AJ Styles is all that upset at his situation right now. Bad influence. On their way into Ring of Honor. Good for them. That's the best fit for them right now. Why are they on their way to Ring of Honor? Why didn't TNA snatch them up? Lock them into a new contract? Put them in a feud on TV with the Wolves? What are the Wolves doing right now? The Wolves are the tag team champions. They're nothing. They're a bunch of nothings on that show. I mean, everything. Everything about this promotion is so... It's so sad. But I watch because I want them to improve things. I want them to succeed. I bought tickets. I'll be at one of the tapings. If they survive that long, I'll be at one of the TV tapings in New York City at the Manhattan Center next month. Because I always have fun when I go to shows, whether it's TNA, ROH, WWE. You know, so me and Brian Blade, we're going to go to the show. Could very well be the last ticket I ever buy to a TNA show at this point. Watching Impact week to week, you know what? It's not a guarantee anymore. People forget because we have a lot of new listeners to this show. I do a weekly Impact review. That never was the way that it used to be. There was never a consistent weekly Impact review on the show because I refused to watch because it was terrible. When it got good, I incorporated the Impact review into the show. And now we found ourselves 2 years later. I look at what's happened here, and I don't know how much longer I could go on like this watching this show. That's how bad it is. I mean, this week's show was terrible. And I don't even know what happened the last half. Maybe there was some really good wrestling. I'm willing to bet that there was a lot of run-ins and probably more brawls and more MVP. I can almost guarantee it without even looking at what happened. So something has to change. They've got the next month of TV in the can, so they can't change much right now. Bobby Roode, remember he in storyline, Bobby Roode is suspended. Bobby Roode is one of the best parts of that show. Austin Aries was on TV this week. I can count on one hand how many times Austin Aries has been on that show in the last 3 or 4 months. And they let Bad Influence go. I mean, what's left? What's left at this point? So whatever they're doing, whoever's writing these shows, whoever's giving advice on these shows, okay, we can speculate on who that is. They have to stop doing that. They need a different direction. They need a new vision. I don't know who gives them that new vision. They may be past the point of no return here. I don't know what you can do at this point. I really don't know. I don't have an answer. We'll try again next week, but I don't know. Let's go to the mailbag. If you have questions, you can always email them to me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from. You could also send MP3 audio questions as an attachment. Romit from Mumbai, India. With Daniel Bryan injured indefinitely, I don't think he should be off TV for that much time. As over as he is, he still needs to be in a top storyline for a while before he establishes himself as a top guy, just like Austin did in the fall of 97. How would you keep Bryan on TV until he is fit to wrestle again? And Romick goes on to suggest Vince returning to replace Brad Maddox with Daniel Bryan as the GM to combat the Authority. It's an idea. Again, Brad Maddox got a name drop on Raw for the first time this week in months. Still hasn't appeared on Raw. Why he's the Raw GM, why they even need a GM since the Authority calls the shots, that hasn't been explained. So the general manager stuff, it's so played out. I mean, it could be entertaining, I guess, if Vince forces them to kind of take orders from Bryan. It could be something for him to do, keep him on TV and keep him over with the fans if he keeps fucking with the Authority. The big difference, though, between Austin in 97, you mentioned that, and Bryan now, is that Austin was not recovering from surgery. He did not have an operation on his neck for another 2 years. He got dropped on his head at SummerSlam. He got a stinger. And he couldn't wrestle right away. But they found a way to keep him on television. He was stunnering people. He was running amok. He was attacking people until finally he was fit and able enough to come back and wrestle a match. Bryan had surgery. It doesn't sound like a major operation, and apparently he'll be on Raw this Monday. I assume he'll be there in the flesh. I don't know that he'll do anything physical. But he did have surgery. So there could be a certain period of time where he is not cleared to do anything physical. He has to be home. He really shouldn't be flying all over the place. Maybe flying isn't good for his neck. I don't know. But that would be the big difference between Austin in 97 and Bryan now. One was operated on, the other one was not. This comes from David. Since we're clearly heading for a Sheamus Cesaro match at Payback, what are the odds of doing a double turn similar to Ziggler Del Rio from last year? Cesaro is already over with the fans, which Sheamus is not, and with long rumors of Sheamus turning heel, plus a Chicago crowd that's guaranteed to be behind Cesaro, do you think the time is right? I know you've been behind the idea of doing a double turn for Sheamus and Wade Barrett, who I do believe should go face soon. I believe Cesaro could benefit from it more and get over more as a babyface than he is now with the fans. Well, here's the thing about that. To turn him full-on babyface, Cesaro, that is, you'd have to break him away from Paul Heyman. And it's way too early to break him away from Paul Heyman. Right now, he's playing more of a heel, but he still gets a babyface reaction, you know, some weeks, and he probably will in Chicago, you're right. People who want to cheer him are already cheering for him. I say, stay the course, at least for a few more months, until Brock Lesnar is back. And then, you know, if you want, you can build some dissension there and maybe split Cesaro away from Heyman at that point. It's just, it's too early to break them up now. It's not even June yet. You know, Payback is on June 1st. They just aligned. Has it even been a full 2 months? I don't even know if it's been a full 2 months. Maybe it's been 2 months exactly. That's not a long time. It's too early to break them up, and the fact is, when you're with Paul Heyman and the guy is going out there every single week trolling the fans about Brock Lesnar conquering the streak, you can't be a 100% total babyface. It's just not going to work. Ernie in Raleigh, North Carolina, if WWE wants to truly have something for everybody, I think they should include some legitimate fights on live television. We have the Divas division, comedy angles, even a minis division. I wouldn't call it a division. I've been advocating for one, but two minis does not a division make. I feel like including MMA/UFC-style wrestling would build some more stars and draw more viewers, as non-scripted endings are popular in this reality era. How do you feel about this, and do you think it would be a waste of time for WWE? I've got three words for you, my friend. Brawl for all. That may have been the more boxing than MMA, but it was a horrible idea. And a lot of guys got hurt doing it. Dr. Death. Okay, his career got squashed because of the Brawl for All tournament. So that's the main reason I wouldn't do it. You're risking too many injuries at a time when they can ill afford for guys to get hurt. The other reason is, all that does, and maybe I'm alone in thinking this, I feel like all that does, if you're going to incorporate, you know, quote, real fighting now into the fake fighting show, it just illustrates how fake wrestling really is. And I hate using that word, but I will. I can't think of a better one right now, so I'll use it. But, you know, on the same show where guys routinely punch and kick each other in the face and don't have any bruises on them, you're going to have a shoot fight where they'll probably get bloody and bruised in the first, like, 2 minutes. I don't think you really want to point that out to people. And that's another thing, the blood factor. Guys are going to bleed. In real fighting, it's unavoidable. There's no blood in the reality era, which kind of flies in the face of what a reality era should be, I guess, but that's just how it is. So no, I wouldn't do it. Ross from Wolverhampton, England. Solomonster, just a simple question for you. Which WWE superstars do you think could literally kick someone's ass in a bar fight? Apart from Brock Lesnar and The Big Show, I am struggling. You're from England. How could you leave out Wade Barrett? Seems kind of odd. Guy was a legit bare-knuckle fighter when he was younger. I've got my money on him in a bar fight. Mark Henry is another one. I think if you piss him off, he'd be able to handle himself just fine, but I'd go with Wade Barrett for sure. This comes from the man with no name. You've got to include your name when you're writing, guys. What do you think Kurt Angle would have done had he not left WWE in 2000? Would he have stayed on ECW and been the ECW champion? Or would he have gone back to Raw or SmackDown? He would have died. That's what would have happened. That's the path he was going down. He was in rough shape during that time. That's what led him to leaving in the first place. And you know he had to be pretty bad off, because I think WWE gave him an unconditional release from his contract, meaning he can go to TNA pretty much right away, which he did. They don't do that with low-level guys, let alone top talent. So I think had he stayed, he would have stayed in ECW for a while, and we probably would not have Kurt Angle with us right now. Joseph from Connecticut, are you a gamer? Did you ever play WWE games, and if so, what was your favorite? And could you, or if you could see a franchise or game reboot, what would it be? I'm not a gamer anymore. I used to play all the WWE games back when it was still WWF, so that tells you how far back that goes. I played WrestleMania, I'm trying to remember all the old games, Super WrestleMania, WrestleMania the arcade game, where Undertaker would throw ghosts and tombstones at you and all that fun stuff. Steel Cage Challenge, I think it was, for Game Boy was another one. Royal Rumble, Raw. I had the In Your House CD-ROM game, which was, you know, for PC. But my favorite to this day was the WrestleFest arcade game. It was an actual arcade. It had guys from that late 80s, early 90s period, like Hogan, Savage, Warrior, Slaughter, let's see, DiBiase, Perfect, Jake the Snake was definitely in it, Big Boss Man, I think both Demolition and LOD were in there. It was awesome. It was an awesome game. I have a copy of it on my computer somewhere. I downloaded an emulator years ago and would play it, and it still had the insert quarters deal on top of the screen. It was great. I loved that game. I would just mash the buttons and hope that I won. That would be the game I would reboot, and not whatever that piece of shit that THQ put out was a few years ago. They rebooted that game. They rebooted WrestleFest a couple of years ago for iOS. I don't know if they did for Android, but they definitely did for iOS. And I was legit excited when I heard they were bringing it back, and then I played it, and it was total garbage. I don't even know if it's still available in the App Store anymore. I had heard they removed it. I hope they did. Probably realized how crappy it was. This comes from Ross Underwood. I had a question about Joey Styles announcing on Raw between November 05 and May of 06. Did you think having Styles announce Raw worked, or was it a bust? I've also heard rumors of Vince McMahon and Kevin Dunn yelling at Styles in his headset during Raw and after the show. Is this true? Well, I tell you what, if the guy was that good, he'd still be doing their play-by-play, wouldn't he? The fact that he only lasted 6 months means that, yes, he was a bust. I don't know about Kevin Dunn yelling at Styles. I remember the stories of Vince McMahon yelling at him. I do remember reading about that. And maybe Joey's talked about it, or somebody's talked about it. You know, Styles called the moves. He was a lot like Jim Ross in that way, although he was no Jim Ross, but he called the moves. That's not what you're supposed to do in WWE. You're supposed to tell stories. We're storytellers in WWE. That's what they're supposed to do. And hey, look, go listen to interviews with Jim Ross and Mick Foley if you want to know whether Vince McMahon yells in people's ears on headset while they're announcing. Happens all the time. The guy is very hands-on, probably a lot more hands-on than a 68-year-old who's been doing this for as long as he has and who's worth many, many hundreds of millions of dollars, although not as much as he was 2 weeks ago. He's very hands-on when it comes to the minutiae of the product. He's sitting there with a headset on, barking orders, and you know he's like the control center of the show in a lot of ways. It's like I said earlier, he's the Irish madman in their ear. I want Vince to PayPal me $10, by the way, for that nickname. I know he lost $340 million in a day, like a a week or two ago, but he could spare $10 to throw my way. Jack from Sydney, Australia. My question is about the WWE's head writer in 2000, Chris Kresge. As you said on your show, the year 2000 was the best for WWE. I said you could argue it was the best. I didn't actually say it was. I wasn't a fan of WrestleMania that year, for example. But you could argue that, you know, creatively and with the talent they had and everything, that maybe it was their best year. Anyway, he says, I just wanted to know more info on the guy because there is very little known about him online, and I feel like he should get more praise for his work. What do you know about him, and why did he get replaced by Stephanie McMahon after doing a great job? I remember reading about his death. He died in 2005. Kresge started writing for them after Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara jumped ship to WCW. So that would have been late 99, I believe. By all accounts, very well-liked guy. He had worked for years in TV before coming to WWE. He spent a long time on MTV, or with MTV, working on shows like Beavis and Butthead, which was a favorite of mine. Celebrity Deathmatch. I think he helped out with some of the MTV Movie Awards shows. He spent a year as a head writer for The Daily Show with Jon Stewart. In fact, I think he went right from The Daily Show to WWE. He was the lead writer during a time when wrestling was in the middle of a boom period, and WWE had more real stars, like legit stars on its roster, than probably at any other point during its history. Everybody was over back then. Even the mid-carders. Everybody was over. So I'm sure that was helpful. Okay, if he came along now, I'm not so sure he would have the same level of success. Although things probably would make a lot more sense. But, you know, he was a great writer. It's, you know, Stephanie Triple H wedding angle would have been under him. The Shane McMahon Kurt Angle feud. The Triple H Kurt Angle Stephanie love triangle. I don't know if that exactly was his brainchild, but he was the head writer at a time when all those things were going on TV. You know, one of the things he was known for, and supposedly he was mocked for it, but he was the first WWE writer, and maybe the only one since, to use storyboards to map out some of the key storylines in the company. You usually see those used in movies. It's a visual way of mapping out a story long-term from beginning to end. The fact that he was mocked for it, if that's true, isn't surprising if you look at much of what we've seen on TV over the last decade and how half of it never makes any sense. As far as what led to him leaving, I don't know that we'll ever know for sure. Stephanie McMahon took over for him in late 2000 because she wanted the job, and she got it. I think Kresge stuck around for another year or so before he left. He just wasn't the head guy anymore. And the proof is in the pudding. You know, true, WrestleMania 17, probably the best WrestleMania of all time, came at a point when Stephanie was already the head, had already replaced him. But, you know, how much of that was still Kresge's vision? You know, here's a guy who had storyboards and he would lay things out long term. If he was booted, let's say, in November of 2000, WrestleMania was only a few months later, how much credit do you really give Stephanie for that show? You know? You would have to think it took a little while longer for his stories to play out before she and her team put their stamp on things. And it was after that WrestleMania that the boom ended. You know, Steve Austin made the decision to go heel. You can't lay that on Stephanie. And that, really, that did as much as anything, I think, to kill business for them. Which is not to say that, oh my God, their business went in the toilet. They were still doing very well, but you can see the ratings, the numbers, everything started to dwindle. After Austin went heel at that WrestleMania, they had just bought WCW at the same time. So they had this influx of new talent, and the Invasion pay-per-view that summer did really well, but it was this steady decline the rest of the year into 2002. Had Kresge not been replaced, who's to say what would have happened? But he was only in his early 40s when he passed away. I had to look up his obituary to find out what he died from. I knew it was cancer. I just didn't know what type. Apparently it was lung and brain cancer, which just sounds awful. But it just goes to show you, you know, WWE loves to bring in Hollywood writers and TV writers and people from that world who aren't necessarily wrestling fans. And, you know, we see what happens on television every single week. They produce a lot of stuff that just makes you cringe because that's not what you would expect on a wrestling show. They're trying to be more of a variety show and they bring in the soap opera writers and stuff like that. I don't know if Kresge was a wrestling fan or not. I have no idea. It's possible he was. Maybe he grew up on it. He knew the characters. Maybe he didn't. You know, he's another one of those guys who was a TV writer. He came over from that world. He was a writer for MTV and The Daily Show. But, by all accounts, he was somebody who knew what he was doing. And whether he was a wrestling fan or not, again, he was the head writer during a pretty successful, pretty enjoyable period of WWE. So, maybe you don't always have to be a wrestling fan. If you're a really, really good writer who can plan long-term and you have a vision, you know, you can end up with some really fun television. But unfortunately, they don't seem to really have too many Chris Kreskes on their roster right now. And if they do, maybe they do, but their vision is being suppressed by somebody else who has a different vision than they do.
History has been made here!
Quick note here before we get on with this week in wrestling history. It's looking like the final history segment is going to air on Sound Off 333, which would be June 22nd, assuming that we don't miss any shows between now and then. I started this segment a year ago on Sound Off 281. I have enjoyed the hell out of it. It's become one of my favorite things to do, but we can't start repeating things, so as with all good things, it must come to an end. That does not mean that I won't spend time on historical stuff. It just means that for now, there won't be a segment dedicated to it week to week. You guys have been sending me some really good ideas and thoughts about what could potentially replace it. I've considered all my options. I'm still considering my options. But right now, I'm leaning towards not replacing it with anything and just bringing the length of these shows down a little bit because I never intended to do 2 hours every single week. It's become the norm now. There's been so much stuff to cover, and I've incorporated more segments that it's just, it's too much. So instead, what I may do is try to answer more mailbag questions instead. But I am still open to ideas. Doesn't mean that I won't come up with something, and we'll make that a weekly feature. So feel free to email me with any suggestions, and I'm happy to consider them. 18 years ago this week, on May 19th, 1996... it was the infamous curtain call incident in Madison Square Garden at a house show that saw Kevin Nash and Scott Hall make their final in-ring appearances for WWE before being shipped off to WCW, or I should say shipping themselves off to WCW. Scott Hall actually wrestled Triple H, I think, and Kevin Nash as Diesel lost in a steel cage main event to Shawn Michaels. We all know what happened. We don't need to rehash everything. The heels and the babyface members of the clique mixed together in the ring in a show of solidarity, a show of friendship and unity, and something that just didn't happen back then. You didn't see that sort of breaking of kayfabe, as it's called, where heels would mingle with faces on camera. Even though this wasn't taped for TV, still, you know, you had Triple H, who was a heel, out there with Diesel, who was a heel, and had just wrestled Shawn Michaels in the main event, and now they're all hugging, and they're embracing, and they're putting up hand gestures. And that rubbed a lot of people backstage. Supposedly, Bret Hart was upset. Some of the agents were upset. They complained. And Vince McMahon had to punish somebody. And Triple H was the fall guy here, because Shawn was the champ. You weren't going to do much to him. Hall and Nash were already leaving. They wouldn't be back in WWE for another 6 years. So poor Triple H, he got the raw end of the deal. He had his King of the Ring win taken away from him. Really, it just got delayed by 1 year. And did a lot of jobs during that time. He ate a lot of crow. But I think things worked out pretty well for him in the end. 15 years ago this week, on May 23rd, 1999, it was the day that Owen Hart passed away, age 34, at the Over the Edge pay-per-view from Kemper Arena in Kansas City, Missouri. Jim Ross just did an interview with Sam Roberts. It's really, really good, long video interview in studio. If you YouTube it, you'll find it. And Jim Ross shared the same story with Sam Roberts that he did at the one-man show that I went to when JR was in New York back in the beginning of March. And I had never heard him tell this story before, but he told it again here, and it just gives me shivers when I hear it. When the accident happened, Owen fell. He basically died in the ring. I don't think he was alive much longer after the initial fall. And everyone's in a panic. Nobody knows what's happening and what's going on. It's kind of a crazy scene, but the show goes on. And Jim Ross has to make the announcement after one of the matches that Owen Hart has died. And he told the story here that they were in his ear. Kevin Dunn was in the truck. He's in JR's ear saying, JR, we're going to come back to you for an on-camera, and we need you to give an update on Owen's condition. And Jim Ross says, well, you know, Kevin Dunn must have thought I knew, but nobody told me. He kind of hit the switch to talk back to Kevin Dunn and said, Kevin, I don't know what the update is on Owen. And Kevin Dunn just tells him, you know, JR, Owen's dead. And you're on in 10, 9, 8. And he just counted him down. Now imagine if you're Jim Ross sitting there and you're right in the middle of all this. You didn't actually see Owen fall, but he did say that kind of he was looking down, but in his peripheral vision he could see Owen, once he was down low enough, fall and hit the ring post. So I guess maybe he kind of did see Owen fall. But here's this guy who's the head of talent relations as well. So he deals with all these guys. He's got a relationship with Owen Hart like he does everybody else on the roster. He's just told that the guy is dead. And you've got to go tell an audience of millions what just happened. And he's counting you down in your ear. Like, I can't even imagine what that must feel like. But he did it, and it's one of the most surreal moments that I've ever seen on a wrestling show ever. I mean, I don't want to speak for everybody. I remember where I was when that show happened. I was at a friend's house watching the pay-per-view, and when it happened, they wouldn't show it on camera. They didn't want to sensationalize it. Owen fell when they were dark in the arena showing a video package on TV. So thank God they didn't, you know, air it live on pay-per-view. We didn't see him plummet to his death. When they came back, though, they had crowd shots. They would not show what was going on in the ring. Jim Ross was describing to us what was going on, but they wouldn't show us. And I remember sitting there talking to my friend because, you know, we didn't really know how serious the situation was. And I don't want to say that we were joking about it. We were kind of joking about what the ramifications would be. Like, oh my God, can you imagine, like, if he actually died? Like, we didn't actually think he would. We thought maybe he broke his arm or something bad happened to the guy, obviously, but like, oh boy, this is going to be bad news for WWE, a lawsuit, and whatever. And when they came back later on and they actually made the announcement that he died, I just remember sitting there with my friend and we were just stunned. Like, we didn't actually think that that would happen. We were stunned. And we watched the rest of the show because the pay-per-view had, I think, two matches left. After they made the announcement, there were two matches left, the main event matches, Triple H against The Rock and Stone Cold against The Undertaker. So, I mean, that's the Attitude Era in a nutshell right there. Those are the two matches that were left in the show. And I don't even remember, like, I know who won the matches, but I don't really remember much. You're just kind of in a fog. Like, you can't believe what you just heard. And I remember I got the tape. He taped it on VHS, gave me the tape. I was going to take the tape home to show it to my brother. And I just remember walking in the house, and I was actually crying. Like, I started crying because it's like, you know, I just met Owen the year before in my first Raw show ever. You know, they brought him into our luxury box. I had won tickets from a radio station, so we had some personal one-on-one time with these guys. That was the first time I ever met Owen, and he was there with Mick Foley and Mark Henry. I think Luna was there. Nice guy. Like, really, really nice guy. And I'm pretty sure I've shared this story before, but one of the things I'll never forget is when they're leaving the luxury box, because what they did back then, I don't think they do it anymore, but they would take the guys from box to box to box to have some personal time and sign autographs. This was in the hour before the show started, so there were dark matches going on, or maybe they were taping for Shotgun or something. So everybody files out of the luxury box, and Owen was the one guy who, he was the last one out, and right before he left the luxury box, everyone is buzzing. Like, they're not even paying attention to these guys anymore. We're just like, wow, that was awesome. That was so cool. And Owen turns around. Nobody's paying attention. And he just goes, everybody got a picture? Everybody got an autograph? Anybody want? Like, and I'm watching him, and I'm all nervous, you know, because I want to say, yeah. I wouldn't mind getting a photo with the guy. But I was so nervous, my friend's egging me on. I'm like, oh, I raised my hand. I'm like, yeah, well, I'd love to get a photo. And he was like, cool, no problem. He comes over. And, you know, in my little collection here, I'll always have that photo of me, Owen Hart, and my friend. And that was actually the photo I used. I did a write-up in a local newspaper that I was doing a wrestling column for at the time. And I did a whole column on Owen Hart right after he died. And I used that picture in the paper. And that's one of the coolest things. That's like one of the coolest mementos I have. I didn't know the guy personally, but I mean, that's a traumatic thing to be through. I can't even imagine what his family must have gone through. I can't imagine what the wrestlers in the back must have been going through. Those guys knew Owen a hell of a lot better than any fan did. You know, they traveled with him. They knew the family in some cases. Some of them were friends with him. Jeff Jarrett was like tight. You know, him and Owen were best friends. They were tag team partners at the time. And you could tell from Jarrett's reaction on that tribute show the next night how torn up inside he was. And Deborah and everybody. So it's one of those awful memories that I can remember where I was, how I reacted. And when I got home, it was all over the news. All the local news stations in New York led with it. Wrestler falls to his death on pay-per-view in a stunt gone wrong. And, you know, all the stuff that came from that, obviously, the family filed a lawsuit against WWE, which was settled out of court for $18 million. And then I think WWE sued the maker of the harness that snapped, which caused Owen to fall. And it's timely that this anniversary comes up now, because this past week, WWE sent out a survey to some fans asking them about their level of interest in some possible new DVD releases. And one of those ideas is for a series called WWE Reveals, which reads like an investigative, you know, documentary type deal. And one of the subjects listed was Owen Hart's demise. And they had some others in there like the XFL, the curtain call, John Stossel getting slapped by Dr. Death, David Schultz. And I didn't take the survey myself, so I'm going off what other people have said. But to list it as Owen Hart's demise, if that's how it was worded, makes me very queasy. I think we're long overdue for a proper Owen Hart release, you know, covering his career, talking about what happened that night at the pay-per-view. But with that title, it sounds to me like they want to know if people are willing to spend money on a DVD that focuses on the man's death. And that's just wrong, especially if they're making money off it. It's not like they're going to be objective about the subject, you know. You really think they're going to have guys on there talking about how nervous Owen was and how he didn't want to do it and was basically talked into doing it or was worried he might lose his job if he said no. You know, these things have been said before by Owen's wife, by Brett, I think even by some other people. So this is not just conjecture here. That's how Owen felt. He wasn't comfortable doing it, but he did it because he was worried that if you said no to the boss, you might lose your job. It's not like Owen was a headline guy at the time. He was in the mid-card, and, you know, maybe he was legitimately that concerned. I can't imagine that had he said no to the stunt for fear of his safety, they would have fired him. But, you know, you don't know what people are thinking in that position. You know, there's a lot of pressure on you in a position like that. You think they're actually going to talk about that if they do a DVD release like this? Which almost paints them out as the reason why Owen died? You think they're actually going to be that honest about it? Of course not. Or maybe they'll just lay all the blame on Vince Russo for it being his idea, and they'll let him take all the heat. I don't need to rehash all of that stuff. And they're not going to be honest about it, so I think this one is probably better off left alone. Something on the guy's career that includes the stuff on his death is fine, but we don't need a DVD that focuses on only that and exploits it for profit. You're stirring up a hornet's nest for no good reason. Nothing good can come from that. 14 years ago this week, on May 21st, 2000, The Undertaker returned after an absence of several months as the American Badass. This was during the Rock Triple H Iron Man match for the title, with Shawn Michaels as the guest referee wearing way too short biker shorts. Still my favorite Iron Man match is that Iron Man match between Rock and Triple H in 2000. But this was the first appearance of the Dead Man on a motorcycle. Bandana, leather coat, completely reinvented himself. A vision Vince McMahon probably would rather people forget, which I'm guessing is why his match with Triple H at WrestleMania 17 never came up, not even once, in the build-up to his later WrestleMania matches with Triple H. I get the impression Vince McMahon is probably not a fan looking back on the American Badass stuff. Looking back, though, you know, I could appreciate it. I think we were all kind of stunned or shell-shocked by it. It just was the polar opposite of what that Undertaker character had been for so long in WWE. But looking back on it, it was actually, you know, and the Big Evil character he did in 03, I thought, was even better. It was pretty good stuff. It was pretty good stuff. And there are some times when I kind of miss that Undertaker. 13 years ago this week, on May 21st, 2001, Triple H tore his quad on Monday Night Raw for the first time. He tore his other quad a few years later. But he tore it during a tag team main event match that saw him and Stone Cold Steve Austin defending the tag team titles as the two-man power trip against Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit, one of the greatest matches in the history of Monday Night Raw that you'll never see again. At least not on any WWE countdown, you won't. Hopefully it'll be on the network at some point when all those old Raw shows are released in the archives. It was a great match. Crowd was so hot for it, and it was a freak occurrence. It was a total freak occurrence. Jericho had Austin in the Walls of Jericho. Triple H came up from behind, just planted his foot wrong, and tore his quad muscle, and he toughed it out. He wrestled a few more minutes. He even let Jericho put him in the Walls of Jericho on the announce table, which I'm sure could not have felt good at all. And Jericho and Benoit won the titles that night, and Triple H was out for about 8 months. Missed the entire invasion angle, all that stuff with the WCW guys he missed out on. 11 years ago this week, on May 19th, 2003, Triple H and Ric Flair had a match on Raw for the World Heavyweight Championship in Greenville, South Carolina, Flair country. That was a really fun match. It's on Flair. I think it's on Flair's first DVD, as is the post-show tribute, which was Tommy Dreamer's idea, by the way, which can be seen on, I guess it would be the Ultimate Ric Flair Collection. That was that first big DVD set. They had two of them, I think, for Flair. All of that was great stuff. I mean, you know, you look back at Ric Flair's career, and Flair had the best send-off in 2008 that any wrestler has ever had in the history of wrestling, and probably, you know, ever will. Between the Hall of Fame induction, that match with Michaels, and going out the way, and that finish, you know, with Michaels mouthing the words, "I'm sorry, I love you," super kick, he, you know, and gets the big ovation walking out from 75,000 people in the Orange Bowl or wherever it was. And then that Raw tribute the next night was just, it was awesome. But you go back here, and this was almost a decade earlier, 2003, and he is just being paraded around the ring. I mean, there has never been a more celebrated wrestler in history, at least in this country. I don't want to speak for Japan or Mexico or anything, but there really has never been a more celebrated wrestler in history than Ric Flair. 8 years ago this week, May 19th, 2006, WWE's first theatrical film, See No Evil, starring Kane, is released. Film made over $18 million in theaters, which I think is still the best of any WWE film to date. They did the whole May 19th angle, which was kind of clever, actually, to build up interest in the movie. They did that with Kane, where anytime somebody mentioned that date, May 19th, he would snap and beat the crap out of them. I think he tried to gouge Big Show's eyeball out on one show, because that was the gimmick with the movie Jacob Goodnight. His whole thing was he would rip people's eyeballs out and put them in a jar. Very pleasant. See No Evil 2 is actually due out later this year. Danielle Harris is in this version of the film. The Scream Queen. I love Danielle Harris. I've been watching her ever since she was a kid in Halloween 4. And a lot of people are not as big of a fan of the Halloween franchise, you know, after like the first movie, let alone the first two. I am a fan of not just the original, I'm a fan of Halloween 3, which had nothing to do with Michael Myers. I think that movie gets ragged on unfairly by people who probably just haven't seen it on its own. It's actually a really good 80s horror film. And when they brought Danielle Harris in as the main character, this little kid who's tormented by this this maniac killer who comes back after her. She was in the fourth movie and the fifth movie, and especially for a girl that young at the time, she was awesome. Like, as an actress, she was great. I met her at a Q&A that she did for a screening of Hatchet 2. So, I mean, as you can tell, yes, I love horror films. How do you think I'm able to sit through Impact every week? 3 years ago this week, on May 21st, 2011, Sinclair Broadcasting purchased 100% of Ring of Honor from Kerry Silken. They made the announcement to the locker room prior to the Ring of Honor Super Card of Honor show that night in Chicago. And finally, 3 years ago this week, on May 20th, 2011, Macho Man Randy Savage passed away from a heart attack that he suffered while driving. and his wife, I think they were married. I think his wife was in the passenger seat, and she swerved off the road. They hit a tree. She was okay. I mean, that could have been really, really bad. I mean, you have a heart attack while you're driving on the road, and you start driving erratically. I mean, he could have killed somebody. Thankfully, nobody else died that day. But the way it went down was really unfortunate. I know the story of him, and I'm pretty sure they were married, so I'll call her his wife. But they used to be like high school sweethearts. I think before he even got into wrestling, he was playing baseball at the time, and they reconnected all these years later, and they seemed to be happily in love, and then this happened. So a really, really shitty thing. Macho Man's one of my all-time favorites. I know based on all the emails I get weekly from you guys, he's your favorite, or one of your favorites. Because a lot of us grew up on him. You know, it was all about that nucleus of Hulk Hogan and the Macho Man and Andre the Giant and the Million Dollar Man. A lot of us grew up during that time period in WWE. But there are some people who are a little bit older than me who remember Savage from even before he came to WWE. You know, and they would see his stuff back in the old ICW promotion that his father ran. He did some stuff in Memphis with Jerry Lawler before he came over to WWE. I wasn't as much of a fan of his stuff in WCW, but that was kind of the way it was at the time. You know, I wasn't really a big fan of a lot of stuff that they did with the ex-WWF guys when they went over. It just wasn't the same. You know, Hogan was very successful, and Savage was too. You know, he held the world title a few times there, and he was always prominently featured, but it was never the same. And whatever happened between him and Vince and him and WWE, the rumors of him and Stephanie, which have never been verified, and I never put any faith into those rumors at all that he had had some sort of, you know, relationship with a young Stephanie McMahon when he was still working there in WWE. The only reason I can't outright dismiss it is because it's very eerie, some of the comments that people have made, not the least of which includes Savage's own brother, Lanny Poffo. Well, Lanny Poffo, who was very close to Randy, they were very close right up until the time he died, and he's done shoot interviews where he gets asked about this, and he, at least in one of the interviews, he made comments to the effect of, as far as those rumors are concerned, I can't tell you they're true and I can't tell you they're false because I never asked Randy directly about it. You'd have to ask him yourself or something like that. And that just made me take a step back and go like, whoa. Because that's the sort of thing where if you knew it wasn't true, you would, especially if you're the guy's brother, you would dismiss it and go, that's such bullshit. You know, so that rumor got started on some old, you know, BBS, internet bulletin board back in the day, somebody trying to stir up shit or something. And he didn't say that. And that made me think twice and say, you know what? We can't outright dismiss that something may have happened because his own brother wouldn't outright dismiss it. And he was closer to Randy Savage than any of us were. So there's always going to be lingering questions. I think Stephanie's probably the only one who could really put them to bed, Stephanie or Vince. I like to maintain that Vince was probably just very upset at Randy for leaving. Randy was not just one of the old guard. I mean, he was pretty close with Vince. You know, they did the commentary on Raw every single week. There was even some Raw video that popped up on YouTube. I don't know if it's still available. From many, many years ago, after one of the shows, it was Vince, I think Pat Patterson, and Randy Savage walking into a Denny's restaurant. You know, those guys, he was part of that nucleus. I don't know that, you know, creatively he had any input at the time, but he was one of the trusted guys there, and saw that he was being phased out. Vince wanted this new generation. He didn't look at Randy Savage as being somebody who could be at the top of the card anymore. And that didn't sit very well with Savage. He didn't want to be an announcer. He wanted to be a wrestler. He wanted to be prominently featured in the mix, which he was in WCW, so he left. But Vince McMahon gave him this classy send-off on Raw, you know, when Savage made the decision that he was going to leave. This was well before he made his debut on WCW TV, but I remember they came back from commercial break, and Vince McMahon had this on camera, and he did something I've never seen him do before, I've never seen him do since. He said, Randy Savage's contract expired, and we couldn't come to a new agreement. I want to wish Randy all the best. He was saying all these positive things about him. And then he debuted in WCW, And who knows? I mean, maybe it was that sense of betrayal. Maybe it was something else. We'll never know. But it was sad the way that for so many years he was shunned from that company, as big of a part of it as he was. And we'll never have the chance to see him, you know, on stage at a Hall of Fame giving a very Macho Man-esque induction speech. He'll go in one day, I have no doubt about that. But it won't be the same, you know, because he's not there to accept on his own behalf. It's going to be a family member, or if the family refuses to go, it's going to be somebody else who, you know, it's not going to be the same. And that's a shame. And I made a comment on Twitter before, and I was only half joking when I made the comment. You know, we just had this award show with Michael Jackson's hologram. They had like a Tupac hologram a couple years ago. They just had a Michael Jackson hologram. And supposedly it took them 6 months to create this hologram and get it just right. Well, you know what? Time's ticking away. Now's the time. Start working on a Macho Man hologram in time for next year's Hall of Fame. Get some mainstream publicity out of it, too, having a Macho Man hologram. That's going to do it for this week in wrestling history. Keep sending those mailbag questions in, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Follow me on Twitter, @solomonster. You can friend me on Facebook. My name on there is TheSolomonster, with two E's. Send me a friend request. We have a Facebook group, a fan page that you can like. We have a YouTube channel now with well over 8,000 subscribers. So thank you to all those who have subscribed. You can make a PayPal donation on thesolomonster.com. You can check out the Audible trial of their service. Audibletrial.com/solomonster is our unique custom URL that you can use for our podcast. And you can listen to this podcast on Stitcher Radio, stream us on there. We're available for download in iTunes, the website player.fm. We have an official Android app that's available for download for free in the Google Play Store, an unofficial fan-made sound-off app also available for free for those of you who have Windows 8. So lots of different ways to stream, download, or otherwise tune into this podcast each and every week. And we will be back next weekend with predictions for Payback. That'll be episode 330 of the Sound Off. We're about one-third of the way to 1,000 episodes. It's pretty cool. And I have you guys to thank for that, so thank you for your continued support. I want to wish everybody a very happy and safe Memorial Day weekend. If you are celebrating, if you're going out anywhere, or to the beach, or just hanging out and barbecuing with your family, or whatever the case may be, have fun and enjoy the day off from work. And just remember that the wrestlers won't have a day off from work. They're working. They got Raw Live tomorrow night. So hopefully we get a good show. Until next time, be well, stay safe, enjoy the holiday. We'll see you right back here with Payback predictions next week. Take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Solomonster Sounds Off, giving you the good.
I beat the authority, and right now I stand here as the new WWE World Heavyweight Champion.
The bad.
Brock Lesnar into the cover. Hooks the leg. The streak is over.
And the ugly.
Well, we are here with the new married couple.
Now we're attractive partners for life.
Sean and Marty said the same thing once upon a time.
Oh, I knew he was going to do that.
What a despicable act that was.
Oh, my God.
Well, mostly the good.
Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007 on thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes.
Solomonster Sound Off.